Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your Athamazan wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
Tonight we'll have a special extended discussion with Firelight of Inciting a Riot about folklore, faith, mental health, and the magical spirituality community.
Hello, everyone. I would say hello, rioters, but the rioters are not the only people listening to this show today. It's Firelight, your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host from Inciting a Riot, and I am joined today to give you podcasting excellence from my dear good friend, Corey from New World Witchery. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Firelight. Hi. Glad to be here. Glad to be having this conversation with you.
Absolutely. So. We today are going to be having a discussion regarding the recent attempted murder case coming out of the United States. Most of you may have heard about it from The Wild Hunt, from some other articles around the interwebs, the pagan interwebs especially, regarding two young girls that almost killed somebody else over their love of the fictional internet meme Slender Man. And Corey and I felt, hey, this would be a really good conversation to have together.
Yeah. So when I first heard about this story, you hear about all these stories, of course, on Facebook, and you see these things scroll through, and you're like, that's unbelievable. There's no way that's true. You click through the links, and it winds up being true. Well, as soon as I saw, this is basically a story about two juveniles who perpetrated a crime that has some sort of faith-based connotations, but it's not the faith-based connotations that a lot of other similar crimes sometimes get lumped into. I know a lot of people talk about, you know, the crazy Christian
Andrea Yates.
Committing...
You usually hear words like Andrea Yates. You hear, people say the devil made me do it. You hear people say, you know... All sorts of things. But yeah, I think the most famous one probably in the last 20 years was Andrea Yates drowning her, what was it, 5 children in the 90s?
Right.
Because God told her to.
Right. And so that's a significant problem, for any faith-based religion. But the Slender Man thing caught my attention because this deals with folklore, specifically net lore and fake lore. Which are areas that I have some strong interests in, and I won't call it expertise, but I'm, you know, semi-professional folklorist. And then, you know, as soon as I saw that, I also saw that there's a very strong juvenile justice component of this, a very, very strong sociological component of this, and in an area where we need to address mental health as well, but also sort of have a sensitive conversation about faith-informed action. And I thought, who better to have this conversation with than Firelight, who is got massive experience in juvenile court system and has a sociology degree. He's done a lot of work with this. And I thought, you know, this is the person I need to reach out to have this conversation. So we emailed back and forth and decided this would be a really important and useful conversation for us especially, but I think for any of our listeners as well. So
I think that I think you're absolutely right, Corey. It's a really important and very sensitive issue here because it touches on a lot of very key issues of UPG, unverified or unsubstantiated personal gnosis, for some people. And for most people in the pagan community, we experience, or at least claim to experience, some degree of UPG. I mean, I think that anybody really in any faith-based tradition will say that they experience some kind of unverified or unsubstantiated personal gnosis. And the issue there is once you start putting it out there that you've had such and such experience, you open yourself up to criticism, and that criticism, you know, creates a very sensitive, place from which to have a discussion. And oftentimes, you know, we really can't have those discussions because, you know, people start getting very, very upset. And to be honest, rightly so, I think, when other people on the internet are saying, well, you know, you must live up to my standard of what is right. You know, you must live up to what I have, my UPG. And so it's from that place that I think that this is a very, very sensitive, very important discussion to have, because it sort of deals with, you know, the darker aspects of UPG, the darker aspects of folklore and fantasy and even pop culture deities, which, you know, podcasters have really been on the forefront of discussing in the past, you know, 5 or 10 years, you know, bringing forward those pop culture entities and putting them into spiritual practice, which this very much is right in the pocket of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so that's kind of why we've come together today to have this chat. Do you want to give a little background on exactly, I know you gave an overview of the crime itself. Can you give a little background on just what happened in this crime?
Sure.
The juvenile side of this as well.
Now, here's the thing. If you Google this, you are going to come across these children's names. Corey and I have agreed that for the purposes of this discussion, that we will not be mentioning the names of either the victim or either of the defendants in the case. The reason being, they are 12 years old. Now, the reason that you can find their names is because they are currently being charged as adults. However, their attorneys are, and I think rightly so, attempting to get the case put back into juvenile court, which at that time, if journalists don't want to get sued left and right, the names will be redacted and that they will get turned into initials, which is what happens when a juvenile is charged with something. Their name does not appear in any documents. It's their initials. And that is to protect their privacy, because once they turn 18, or once in some states, once they turn 17, they become a legal adult. You know, for all intents and purposes, their legal slate is wiped clean, so to speak, and their juvenile record can become expunged and go away, and they can begin to move on with their lives. This is a very interesting case because two 12-year-old girls, one of which was highly obsessed with the internet meme of Slender Man. And to be perfectly honest, I am not the biggest purveyor of knowledge on who or what Slender Man is. I know that it's a video game of some kind. I know that it's a creepy internet meme that looks like something from Doctor Who. It looks like the Silence from Doctor Who with less of a face, and apparently he kills people. But that's all I know. but one of them became very obsessed with this internet meme, this game, this whatever, this character of Slender Man, and brought her friend along for the ride. And they, over the course of several months, plotted to kill a third friend in order to appease Slender Man. Details from the case are also coming out that they had planned on, they firmly believed that Slender Man had a mansion in the woods in the Wisconsin forest. They planned to go live with him after they killed this other friend, this other 12-year-old girl. They stabbed this girl 19 times after a slumber party in the forest. They kept trying to silence her so that, you know, they wouldn't get caught, and that she could die slowly, so it was better to appease Slender Man. This was all, like I said, in an attempt, you know, as an offering, as a way to appease this Slender Man character so that they could go to live with him and be with him and commune with him or it or whatever. In the case, they have ordered psychological analyses of both girls. At this time, that evaluation, I don't believe, has been done. It's supposed to be completed within the next 15 days. The results will be sealed at that time. So at least it does look like some of the steps that are being taken in this case are in a more juvenile court purview. They are sealing some of the findings so that the public, you know, doesn't have access to those, which I firmly and fully support. The media has also really tried to express how, oh, well, the parents knew that this girl was into Slender Man. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, I think Slender Man is about to become, you know, the next violent video games of, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s. Well, violent video games. If the kid was into violent video games, well, then you know, that...
Oh, and before that, Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, absolutely. Dungeons and Dragons is going to lead you to Satanism, which is going to lead you to kill people. You know, then violent video games is going to lead you to, you know, have become desensitized to violence, and then you're going to kill people. And now it's going to be, well, creepy video games, creepy, you know, neo-folklore is going to cause you to disassociate from reality and kill people. And they're trying to say, oh, well, one of the girl's father knew that she was into Slender Man and saw that she drew this character, and he did nothing about it. And I'm like... okay, so if you find that your kid is a brony, are you gonna try to, you know, get him out of it because he might do something to horses? You know,
he's gonna go start tattooing horses on their flanks.
I mean, I'm like, you know, are you afraid he's gonna get a cutie mark? Oh God, I just right. admitted I've watched that. Oh, that's not.
Well, good. Off the record, I will also admit I have children though, so I can excuse that.
I know Kathleen Borealis and she forced me to, so I'm going to use that as my excuse.
It's a pretty fantastic show, actually, but that's completely aside. To throw a little extra background onto the Slender Man thing, it's an aspect of net lore, which means that it's folklore that began on the internet. It's also fake lore in that its origins are completely known. It started off, it was created by... a man on a discussion board. I believe his name was... Here, I'm going to try and find him. I can't find his name. But he started off this this internet meme that... I believe it was on Something Awful was the forum originally, and it wound up on Creepypasta as well. And it's this... The whole idea was that there was a challenge on that forum to create pictures that were incredibly creepy. And guess what? This guy sent us some photo manipulations and incredibly creepy.
The person's name is Eric Knudsen, a.k.a. Yes. Victor Surge.
Victor Surge. Yes, Victor Surge. That's who I've heard.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
excellent. So Victor Surge posts these. It's basically just photo manipulations in black and white. Always a picture of a very creepy figure standing in the background of photos, usually near children. And so, of course, the users on the message board saw all of this and thought this was so it's fantastically creepy. It's a great horror genre kind of a thing. And so they start developing a story and a mythology that goes with Slender Man. Again, it's all fictionalized. It's sort of a crowdsourced mythology, which I guess you could say a lot of mythology is crowdsourced, but over a much longer period of time. And in this situation, you know, it's clearly been created whole cloth created on the internet, and it was free for anybody to participate. It's just, you know, it's an interest in, you know, horror stories, scary stories. It's, you know, creepy stories that you tell in the dark kind of stuff. That's all it really is. So the fact that this 12-year-old girl starts drawing creepy pictures of this creepy internet meme, maybe her dad should have had a conversation with her about, you know, using the internet appropriately. But I don't think, you know, and that's just based on the fact that some of the things on Something Awful that girl shouldn't be seeing. But the fact that she's drawing this creepy meme does not set off any alarm bells for me, and I would be very surprised if it set off alarm bells for other people as well. So
I mean, exactly. It just goes back to, you know, anytime something like this happens, we have to find the reason why. And sure, this girl, she's using the Slender Man as it, but I mean, it is pretty common knowledge that it doesn't exist. So this immediately goes into, you know, sort of a discussion of disassociation from reality or not accepting the fact that something is fake lore. You know, you run into people on the internet that say, well, I think that in some form Doctor Who is real. I think that in some form Harry Potter is real. I think that in some form Pikachu is real. And over the years, I mean, I was one of the first, from the first of my podcast, I always said, well, that's a little nutso. But over the years, I've come to realize, you know what? Unverified personal gnosis totally is a thing. If I have not had that experience, that doesn't mean that somebody else hasn't had that experience. And as long as they're not out there using Pikachu as a reason to kill people, go right on ahead. It might not work for me, but if it totally works for you, then I don't see anything wrong with it. And what is to say that you seeing Pikachu as the paragon of whatever in your personal practice isn't the same thing, you know, isn't the same thing and right up there for other people as using Athena or as using, you know, some other entity that they read about in a book, they studied, they researched, they love, they feel a connection with, and whatever. You know, you and I were talking a little bit beforehand. This really goes into a discussion of sort of pop culture deities and people using those pop culture entities as paragons, as archetypes of a thing, and then incorporating that into their practice. And that's become a pretty common thing to do these days. I remember whenever I had Michael onto my show, the werewolf.
The werewolf.
The werewolf. He, I think in part B of that episode, he talked about how he has Transformers, you know, the toys, on his altar sort of as archetypes of transformation. And I totally get that. I'm like, sure, you're a werewolf. It's transformation. I get it. He's like, no, I don't think that Optimus Prime is real on somewhere, but it still helps me to get into the right headspace of, you know, the ideas of transformation, the ideas of being something and really being, you know, something different, you know, being in disguise, more than meets the eye. I really wanted to say that in the voice. I don't have the deep resonant more than meets the eye voice. But, you know, I totally get that, and that jives with me, and I get it, and I'm down with it, and that's great. But, you know, then you hear about people that use UPG, that use pop culture deities, and they take it to a very dark place. And that's not to say that a dark place is a bad place to be. That's not to say that people have to be happy and nice and sweet all the time, that we can't work through our darkness, that we can't work through the darker aspects of deity, the darker aspects of self. But when you see people talking about, you know, I'm working with Loki because I got interested in him after such and such, and working with Loki, you know, gosh, he's really tormenting me and blah, blah, blah. And I tried to kill Loki, and I've tried to, you know, Loki has told me to hurt my children, and instead I've tried to hurt him. And I think, you know, I've cut myself. And, you know, you see people on the internet that take it to a very dark place and then claim to be thinking these very dark thoughts and doing these very dark actions. And the problem is that you're not allowed to say, are you okay? Is everything okay? You know, and to bring up aspects of mental health and to try to take it, you know, to a possible medical place. Because I think, you know, there is a real actual clinical diagnosis for dissociative disorder. You know, being out of touch with reality, which it very much seems like these girls were. Very much disassociated with reality, with understanding that, like you said, that this is fake lore, that this was made up. You can Google it, and it is on Wikipedia, and you can see who made it up. I have to wonder what that guy thinks. I wonder if anybody has interviewed that guy since then.
I haven't seen any interviews with him, but it's possible. I think one thing I would like to sort of put out there is that I'm willing to take them at their word that they truly believed that doing this would somehow call forth Slenderman. That's something that they believed. And so that gets into an issue of belief can do a lot of really, really funny things. It doesn't at all justify this crime. It doesn't at all justify any other crimes that are perpetrated in the name of belief. But belief can certainly do some funny things to people when it comes to their belief and how it shapes the way that they interact with other people, with the world around them. They had this very, very firmly held belief that they were going to sacrifice this friend and then get access to Slender Man. Well, there are a number of people who also believe that certain deities, especially African diasporic traditions, where animal sacrifice is absolutely a part of the practice. And I mean, even if a padrino
Lukumi is a vegetarian in all other ways. There are just going to be times that that person has to perform animal sacrifices for the sake of those spirits. And I think that there are people in our community who would denounce that almost as strongly as they would denounce the Slenderman thing. But there are people on the other side who would say, no, that's a legitimate requirement of that faith. And it's a very difficult middle ground to navigate in terms of understanding our relationship with the divine, for example. It's very easy to say, you know, as long as your pop culture deity, as long as Hermione Granger is telling you that you should be planting trees and being nice to people, that's fine. But when Hermione Granger says, now you need to go kill all the child molesters. Okay, well, that seems weird. And I don't know where to go with that. You know, it's just a situation where how do we address these personal no-sees? And like you said, ask, are you okay?
And I agree. And I know that I got into a discussion, a pretty heated discussion, and rightly so, because it was on a topic that I knew very little about, and I jumped to conclusions, the idea of God spousery. Sort of the resurgence of God spouses and the nature in which they are handled in the discussion of them online. And, you know, I got into sort of a heated discussion earlier this year on social media around February with some folks, some from other blogs, some from other podcasts, some that are just listeners and like to you know, engage on social media with me, you know, that said, hey, we can't immediately try to medicalize these things. We can't immediately hear that somebody has, you know, an experience and then try to take it to a place of mental health. And, you know, I come to realize I agree with that. You cannot immediately try to medicalize UPG. Where I think that it is perfectly okay and it should be encouraged to ask questions is if I am told, okay, well, I have been engaging in a relationship with Deity X. Deity X and I do such and such in our relationship. Okay, that's fine. You're having a relationship with Deity X. You're getting a lot out of it. That's wonderful. Every now and then you go plant a tree in Deity X's honor, and you're deepening your spiritual practice. That's great. Then you hear from people that say, I have a relationship with Deity Y. Deity Y makes me crazy. Deity Y keeps me up at night. I have insomnia because of Deity Y. Deity Y, you know, has encouraged me to harm myself, has encouraged me to harm my children. You know, I remember one person said that they attempted to kill Deity Y, that, you know, that they were thinking of ending their own life. And the problem that I then have is that if you say, okay, that sounds like an issue of mental health, and maybe we need to, you know, encourage you to seek some help in your area from somebody outside of a spiritual community who can take a look at this and say, okay, this is a safe relationship to continue. This is not a safe relationship to continue. Because I think what people don't realize is oftentimes psychologists, psychiatrists, they're not going to immediately say something like, oh, you're crazy. You know, I remember referencing the same episode that I had with Michael, the werewolf. I also had a clinical psychologist on that episode who studies things like, you know, people that hear voices and people that make these interesting, outrageous claims, or not outrageous in the sense of they're strange or weird or bad, but outrageous in the sense of they're out of the ordinary. And what she said was, no, a good therapist, a good psychologist, a good clinician will say, okay, tell me more. You know, what kind of thoughts does Deity X give you? What kind of thoughts is Deity Y giving you? And as long as they don't feel clinically that you are a threat to yourself or other people, they may very well, you know, give their blessing and say, okay, you know, I'm going to definitely want to keep talking about this, but, you know, go right on ahead. You know, if you listen to the fantastic podcast, Oh No, Ross and Carrie, good friends of my show, and I know both of us engage with them on social media as well. Ross recently said on their show about oil pulling that he was talking to his dentist. And he told her sort of after the fact that that he had been doing oil pulling and was saying, well, you know, these were the findings. These were what we were trying to get out of it. This is all of that. And she said, oh, my gosh, I wish you had told me you were doing this so that I could have looked at your teeth beforehand and we could have looked at your teeth afterwards and see what kind of difference it made and looked at, you know, the overall health of your mouth and that kind of thing. And very mm-hmm. often, I think what people don't realize is that medicalizing something, trying to, you know, put it into a scientific arena, doesn't necessarily take the spirituality out of it. All it does is make sure that things are safe, that you're doing something that is not going to cause harm to yourself or other people. And it also might help you out a little bit. It might help you figure out what's going on. And hey, who knows, you might be having a UPG that then a scientist goes, oh my God, you're talking to Thor. Holy crap, that's amazing. You know, and you may very well verify something for a scientist. You never know. And I think that it can speak to an inherent distrust the spiritual community has with science, you know, and sort of a prejudice against science, which I think is not necessarily warranted. You know, I think that oftentimes scientists very much embrace the strange and the weird and the bizarre, and they want to study it and they want to learn more about it. So I think go ahead.
Right. The spiritual community often thinks, I think, science is there to disprove spiritual experience, when it's not necessarily there to do that. It's there to explore it one way or the other. It's not trying to disprove. It's not always trying to prove. It just wants to know more. That's what science is really good at. It's good at asking questions. So, And I think it's very easy to feel very threatened from a spiritual perspective by science, because we're so used to thinking of the idea of science has to be hard, cold facts and proof, when in fact a lot of science still leaves a lot of space for discussion, exploration, and learning more and getting more information. I don't know. That's just kind of my take on it. And one thing I think that we're both kind of getting at, you know, is that these experiences are real. For lack of a better word, they are real to the people they happen to.
Absolutely. Just to reaffirm what you said, I don't doubt for a second that these girls firmly believed in Slender Man. I mean, I whether or not it was disassociation from reality, whether or not whatever, I don't doubt for a second that they firmly and fully had faith in what they were doing.
Right. And the thing is that these real experiences can manifest themselves in people's lives in very interesting and sometimes wonderful, sometimes horrible ways. I mean, you have the real experience of Joan of Arc, for example, hearing the Archangel Michael telling her what to do and successfully leading the French in battle, which is great. And I guess unless you're English, it's great. You know, there's... But then, you know, you also have the Salem witch trials, where it's very possible that the girls who were experiencing what they felt was bewitchment were having some very real experiences, whether those were related to social repression or, you know, fungus poisoning or, you know, it could genuinely have been witchcraft. You know, we have no idea exactly what was going on, but for them it was a real experience, and it led to people being executed, people being killed because of it. And so there's this really difficult thing that we have to do, I think, which is, like you said, a good psychologist is going to say, tell me more. They never say, hold on, you know that's not real, right? And I think that's the thing that we as a very open spiritual community are actually pretty good at. We're pretty good at saying, oh, okay, that's real for you. That's fine. Tell, you know, that's wonderful. But where do we go from there? Where do we say, okay, so Pikachu is your power animal. You know, what do we do with that? You know, how do we address the thing that we don't understand from somebody else's spiritual?
Exactly. And I know that for me, I mean, to be perfectly honest and to own up to my faults, I still to this day have a tough time when somebody tells me, oh yeah, I work with Harry Potter. You know, or, oh, yeah, I work with, like you said, I work with Hermione Granger. Pikachu is my totem animal. And I'm like, okay, because then I immediately think, but we know where that comes from. You know, what, Really, of all the things you could pick, that's what you're picking? But the problem is, what makes their relationship with Pikachu any more or less real than somebody else's relationship with Athena? I mean, because for all intents and purposes, these days, modern times, Athena is a name you hear in a book, a name you read about in a book. It's a name you hear in class somewhere when you talk about classical literature, classical mythology, or, you know, history sometimes, things like that. You know, what makes it any more or less real than somebody else's God in a box, than somebody else's brand of crazy? And, you know, I think that that is a very good lesson for us to take away, is that if somebody has an experience, say, tell me more, what is this, what do you mean? But then whenever we are asked those questions, to realize that, hey, I have experienced a new thing, I took it upon myself to decide to share that with the world. The world has not heard of this thing before, probably. Maybe I should try to answer these questions to the best of my ability. Because it is only then, when we foster a healthy dialogue, and realize, you know, and come to it from, you know, assume positive intent, an assumption of positive intent, that we're going to create a conversation and create, you know, a productive discussion around unverified and unsubstantiated personal gnosis. But until then, you know, if we continue to feel like victims whenever somebody says, okay, you're telling me that you keep a pet Pikachu in your house that helps you with your daily chores. I was just at your house yesterday and I didn't see Pikachu, so what do you mean by Pikachu? And then somebody says, well, how dare you? You know, this is my truth and this is my reality. Listen, I'm not saying it's not real for you. I'm just saying, what do you mean by you have a pet Pikachu? You know, I think that right. Fostering a discussion, fostering the assumption of positive intent, and actually living up to that, you know, not going at it from, oh my God, you people are crazy, which, to be honest, is sometimes where my snarky behavior gets me into, you know, and I know that for myself, I have to pull back.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that that's a very natural reaction for some people to have. You know, you tell me that your plate of spaghetti talks to you, because you are, you know, you took the flying spaghetti monster to a whole new place, and now you have spiritual experiences whenever you eat pasta, you're going to have to tell me more, because we know where that comes from. We know it comes from, you know, a PTA father in Oklahoma. You know?
Right.
I think it's also important for us to go ahead and say that just because a deity or an entity or your unverified personal gnosis is talking about, for lack of a better term, darker things, darker aspects of self, you know, is making you feel darkness, or is, I don't know, a personification of the darkness that you're feeling, is not inherently and imminently a bad thing. I think that it is perfectly healthy to work through darkness. I know one of my favorite artists of all time is Alanis Morissette, and she calls anger a beautiful emotion. You know, which anybody that's ever heard Jagged Little Pill, I would probably agree with her. but I think that it is doing people a disservice if you say, oh, well, you had a negative experience, you need to go seek help. That's not necessarily what I think we're saying. I think what we're saying is...
Yes. It's so easy to dismiss. It's so easy to dismiss those negative experiences and say, you know, it's all well and good until someone loses an eye. You know, it's all fine and dandy for you to have these love and light experiences. It's all okay as long as your worship of Poseidon is you putting horse figurines on your altar, all is well. But the second that you cross over and say, well, you know, the way that they actually would have performed an offering to Poseidon at this period in time is they would have built an altar on a beach and sacrificed a horse, so I'm going to go sacrifice a horse on the beach. Society has an issue with that.
Yes.
And possibly rightly so. So it's, you know, what do we do with these darker manifestations when there's probably some legitimacy to the performance of these sort of darker rituals. A really good example, and this is coming from a non-pagan perspective, but in Catholicism, there's a number of people who will perform flagellations. They will self-flagellate, which means that they will whip themselves, sometimes to the point of bleeding, as a a method of being cleansed of their sins.
I just want to name check Dan Brown how you doing?
Right. Well, and name check Gerald Gardner. That was part of the Wiccan initiation ritual. Not to the point of bleeding. It was much more symbolic in his rendering of it. But you know, there are these elements of of darkness. There are some pagan practices that I know Peter Padden has talked about, the idea of when you first start working with the Dark Mother, for example, it's very common to start getting these really deeply bloodthirsty dreams and having these really dark hallucinations even. And with all of that sort of in play, I tend to be very, very willing to say, you know, it's something that we have to explore and have to address, but where are our boundaries? You know, what are, and this crime really forefronts that in terms of, you know, we all sort of acknowledge that this is a wrongful behavior, but I don't want that to be the end of the conversation.
No, absolutely not. You know, it's interesting that you said it's all well and good until somebody loses an eye. There was this, when I first heard of this story, this immediately reminded of a story that I talked about on my show way back in 2011. I didn't realize it was that long ago. I'm getting old. But there was a man in Italy, a British-born man in Italy named Aldo Bianchini. And he was in a Sunday Mass, and he, a 46-year-old man, gouged out his own eyes during Sunday Mass because he felt, because he said that he was hearing voices telling him to do so. Doctor said that before his surgery, Bianchini, the surgery after the fact where they tried to reattach his eyes, before the surgery, Bianchini had told them he had heard voices telling him to tear out his eyes. And the doctor on duty said, in all my 26 years of service, I've never seen anything like this. You know, and you see instances of this from time to time. What was it, last year, year before? Was it 2012? There was a young boy, I think he was Indian, I think he was technically Indian, but yes, in France. Wasn't he staying with an uncle, and his uncle believed he was a witch and then tortured and killed him horribly because he felt God told him to do so. And, you know, again, it's not that we can't, you know, discuss whenever a deity wants us to take us to a darker place, you know, to face our inner demons, so to speak. But I think we have to seriously question, and I think that we need to seriously embrace the questioning whenever that voice, that dark place that we're being taken to, involves harming self and harming other people. You know, to me, from a sociological criminal justice perspective, immediately starts getting into antisocial personality disorder, which some people used to call psychopathy or a psychopath. Dissociating from reality, not realizing that what you're doing is wrong, you know, not having the emotional connection and realizing that what you're doing is to another person and that kind of thing. You know, it can very much, you know, disassociate yourself from reality and not realize that what you're doing is wrong. It's against society. It's against the rules of play, so to speak. You know, we don't kill one another. That's not okay. You know, that's another person's life that you're dealing with. And it's also not okay for your deity to say, you know what, you should just kill yourself. You know what? You just pluck out those eyes, buddy. You know, are gonna be good with some spaghetti. Just pluck them on out. It's okay. You know, if your deity is telling you to rip your own eyes out, or to kill a young child, or you know, to drown your children in a bathtub, as all of the examples that we've talked about, I think that is definitely a place from which you should probably go ahead and seek some guidance, some professional guidance. Again, I don't think anybody in the medical community is immediately going to say you're crazy, you need to be locked up. But they may definitely want to help monitor this activity and work it through in a clinical setting.
Definitely. And this gets into the idea of social contracts, that we have a responsibility to ourselves and to one another to fundamentally be caretakers for the well-being of those in our society. And I do feel like there is, from the pagan perspective, it is one of our social contracts that we will believe you. We may ask some questions, some fairly probing questions, because we want to know more. Just because, you know, we never know, your deity might be more interesting than the one we're working with.
Absolutely.
We're shopping around, you know. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, it may be something where we share enough bonds, but we don't share all bonds within the pagan community. And so we want to understand each other as well as possible, so that if we overhear somebody saying, oh, well, they work with Loki and therefore they're evil, we can jump in and say, no, I know something about this from a friend of mine who works with Loki. Mm-hmm. There are some dark sides of that, but this is what that means. Yeah, and we want to be able to share that responsibility.
It's sort of the same thing that I feel like when I hear, oh, they're Satanists, that's evil, that's bad. I'm like, actually, no. Satanism is not evil. Actually, it's hedonistic, it's humanistic. There's a lot of, it's not the Christian idea of Satan, except when it is. There's a lot of different forms of it. It's not evil. People are not out there trying to kill people in the name of Satan, that kind of thing. And it's because when you hear that that's really a thing, you know, that somebody says, oh, I believe that I can fly. I believe that I worship Satan. I am a this, I am a that. It's because then we ask questions, we do research, and we come to from a place of positive intent and have a discussion and come to an understanding of what that means. So that then we can be good advocates for our community. You know, if the only thing that you know about is Love and Light, Scott Cunningham flavored Wicca, then if somebody starts talking to you about Lokean dynamics, or somebody starts talking to you about Gnostic Christianity, or somebody starts talking to you are not going to be a good advocate for the pagan community in that regard, because all you're going to know is what Scott Cunningham talked about in a couple of his books. And if you really want to call yourself a pagan and to put yourself out there and to answer questions from individuals, it would behoove you to inform yourself first. And that's going to come from talking to the people that claim to be the thing.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to become an expert on anything. You know, you've got enough going on in your life to manage your own personal gnoses. You've got enough going on in your life to manage your own relationship with deity. But being informed about what goes on in the community at large is important. And I think that the social contract that I'm sort of the way that I'm seeing this, there is a social contract, I think, already kind of in place. And we all, I mean, you and I seem to recognize that pretty easily. And I think most people sort of recognize that, you know, just because somebody's a different flavor of pagan, you know, just because I'm an Asatru and they're a Druid doesn't mean that we can't get along. You know, there's a shared bond of some kind there, even if it's not a deep one. But I think maybe I would say this incident and incidents like this are highlighting the need that we have as a community, because we are so open. This is highlighting a need for us to extend that social contract to say, well, this behavior concerns me. Can I help you make sense of it, even if that means getting you the number of a good psychologist?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that it's those kinds of questions and it's those kinds of conversations that, you know, if you see them happening online, instead of immediately assuming that the person asking it is calling that person crazy and is saying that they need to be locked up or something, you know, maybe let's realize that, you know, if we are... if somebody is coming from a place of positive intent and a place of actual true worry and saying, you know what, you're saying a lot of things, you know, in this area, you know, on this social media, on your blog, on your whatever, or you just told me in person, you know, that your deity of choice, your EPG, the entities that you work with, the spiritual practice that you do, is causing you to have some thoughts of self-harm, is causing you to have some thoughts of harm to others, you know, is taking you to a place of deep depression. I mean, again, it doesn't even have to be harm to self or others in a physical way. It could be harm to yourself in the sense of, you know, you're becoming very depressed because of your relationship with this deity. You're withdrawing from other people, which isn't to say that having alone time is a bad thing, but it is a sign of depression. It is a sign of possible needing of some psychological, some therapeutic assistance. And I think that when we see those conversations happening online, we should, instead of immediately jumping in and saying, "Hey, how dare you?" we should say, "You know what? If you're having these thoughts, self-harm, harm to others, if it is drastically changing your personality and taking you to a much darker place, maybe this person is right. Maybe, you know, we're all here for you. We encourage you. You know, we understand, and we also agree as a community that, at least seeking some kind of guidance would not be a bad thing." Instead of poo-pooing all over it and saying, "Well, you're just trying to medicalize this. You're trying to, you're taking away from his real and true experience." I think that there is a healthy middle ground to experience there.
If your witchcraft grows betwixt the roots and weeds of your garden,
or between the cracks of your busy life, get a cup of tea,
pull up a chair, and join us for Betwixt
and Between, a podcast of chats between
two modern traditional witches,
if you're not too busy,
and your kids asleep.
Hello, this is Firelight, creator of Inciting a Riot, the podcast. Come join the riot as I tackle tough issues in paganism, news, and living a modern, magical, middle-class life. Find the show on iTunes or become a rioter by following the blog at fire-lyte.blogspot.com. Inciting a Riot, lighting a fire under comfortable thinking.
From another angle of this, a lot of the people, or a lot of the fields that I study involve types of magic or types of magical belief systems in which a person perpetuating harm through magic. But within the context of those communities, doing harm always has a consequence. If you set out to be the bad guy, if you set out to do evil, then there is a consequence to that. So. I don't want to discount the idea that, I don't want to put it into perspective of, well, anytime you step outside of the box of love and light, we need to start asking mental health questions. There are out there to do some harm, magically speaking. And I think that that's one of those things where we have to acknowledge, do they recognize the consequences of that behavior? If so, what is our next step? Right?
Exactly.
Does that make sense? That
yeah,
might be
absolutely
random.
To discuss a little bit deeper into issues of mental health, this also immediately reminded of a study that I studied when I was in school, getting my degree in social sciences and criminal justice. And when you go through classes like abnormal psychology and criminal behavior, you read interesting studies like this. There was one done in June of 2000. Called The Functional Anatomy of Auditory Hallucinations in Schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is, I don't think, called schizophrenia anymore. I think it's, again, called dissociative personality disorder. But I could be wrong. I'm sure I'll get lots of people correcting me on that. But basically, what happened was they took individuals that claimed that they heard voices, that they had auditory hallucinations in some form or fashion. They used continuous whole brain functional MRIs with a magnet to map the cerebral activation associated with those kinds of hallucinations in four different subjects with schizophrenia. These subjects experienced episodes of auditory hallucination while in this scanner so that those periods of hallucination could be compared with periods of rest. The period of rest is sort of your control area. Okay, what does your brain look like when it is not experiencing these hallucinations? Well, in every single individual, in all four people that were put through this scanner, when they had the auditory hallucination, all four people had the same exact areas of their brain go off. Group analysis demonstrated shared areas of activation in right and left superior temporal gyri, left inferior parietal cortex, and the left middle frontal gyrus. When the data were examined on an individual basis, the temporal cortex and prefrontal cortex areas were also activated during episodes of hallucination in all four subjects. These findings support the theory that auditory hallucination reflects abnormal activation of normal auditory pathways. So what does that mean? That means that when somebody tells you that they hear voices, that they are likely hearing voices. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it is caused by some kind of chemical imbalance, whether or not it's caused by, a weird wiring thing in your brain, they are likely actually hearing voices. Medical science has supported this. What medical science is not saying is, oh, well, this is now just a medical thing and you're crazy if you think that God is talking to you. What they're saying is that, okay, you say God is talking to you, and when you say God is talking to you, you are actually hearing something. So, you're not, for lack of a better term, making it all up. You are actually hearing something. So, again, it goes back to that idea that when you hear somebody say, well, I spoke to such and such deity, I communed with such and such deity, not to immediately discount their experience as crazy, but to say, okay, well, what do you mean? Do you mean that you actually heard a voice? And the thing is, again, asking a deeper question doesn't necessarily mean that, that person is trying to disprove you in some regard. All it's saying is that, okay, are you saying you hear a voice? Because medical science says that that's a possible thing that you can do. Is it just more of a feeling that you have? Is it whatever? And that goes to those conversations that we should be having, that open dialogue, to make sure that the overall mental health of our community is a flourishing, healthy, entity. I think that that can only be a positive for us.
Yes. And at the same time, while I think we're definitely coming at this from the perspective of treating what people are experiencing as real, and, empathizing with them on that front, being open to listening to what they have to say about that we're, if we want a positive community, then we have to be willing to also take a little bit of responsibility when we think that those experiences are leading people to do things that violate the social contract of well-being for other people and as much as possible for themselves. I have to hem and haw a little bit on the, if they hurt themselves, or if they're doing animal sacrifice, things like that, because, there are some legitimate, all of it's legitimate, I guess, but there are some people who perform self-flagellation or perform animal sacrifice that I don't think are experiencing any kind of particular mental health issue.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think that those individuals are doing that in the context of a practice to achieve a result. But I think that that there's research, there's data surrounding that, why people mm-hmm. do that thing. But if what you're telling me is that, you slit your wrists because you want to get closer to I don't know, Pikachu. Pikachu is telling you to slit your wrists, that might be a different story. That's playing a little bit more of a dangerous game, and that isn't something that there is an established context for, which again goes back to maybe let's understand the context, maybe let's put a box around it in some regard. Where is it a healthy thing to do this? Where is it not a healthy thing to do this? Is it ever a healthy thing to do this? That kind of thing. But I'd be really interested to hear from you, Corey, more of the spiritual aspects, because I think we've said the word mental health probably 8,000 times so far this episode. But I'd like to hear from you more, what does this mean from a spiritual perspective if you're talking to a deity that is taking you to more of a darker place?
Right, and that is probably, that is an incredibly difficult question from a spiritual perspective for a lot of people, because there are, within our community, our larger society is highly informed by Judeo-Christian values, which draw clear dichotomies between good and evil. They just separate them out, for lack of a better term, into light and dark, good and evil, good and bad, right action, wrong action, and things like that. And in our community, a lot of the spiritualities in our community, there are a lot more shades of gray. You can have a cosmology, you can have a worldview that very much says, you know, fairies can tell you where to plant things in your garden, or they can tell you that you need to, you know, draw a certain symbol on somebody's front doorstep because they've been cursed by the fairies. Okay, so that doesn't seem as bad, you know, unless you fully buy into this idea that the fairies are going to actually come and curse that person. Or, you know, maybe the fairies are telling them to burn the house down. Okay, well, now I think we've crossed the line, but how do we understand that? And so, you know, in a lot of spiritualities, and a lot of particularly what we call vernacular religion, which is just a fancy way of saying folk belief, there's not a crystallized, dogmatic, on paper way to say this is according to the faith, this is according to the belief system. Paganism, in general, does not have crystallized, you know, written down dogma the same way that, an Abrahamic faith would have, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
vernacular expressions of faith.
Yeah, there's no one book. There's no one set way of doing things. Paganism itself is an umbrella term. So, you know, saying that there is the one way to contact a deity, or there is the one way to commune with such and such deity, you know, would definitely be ringing false in our community.
Right. And so we have these cosmologies, these ideas that, you know, some people are very animistic. I, for example, am very animistic. So I am led to believe that there are certain spiritual forces that I have to interact with and appease, for lack of a better term, whether that's with a cup of cold water or, you know, a spraying of rum or a candle. Nobody's going to question the validity of those performances of religious function. I mean, some people might, but for the most part, you know, the fact that you spit rum over the doll of a specific entity, at best, people are going to be like, that's a little weird, not my thing. I'm not going to be drinking after you. But it's not an immediate.
All I know is that at Supermoot, everybody hides their hairbrushes from Corey. That's all I'm going to say.
Right. Okay. Well, that gets into a really good example. What I was talking about earlier, it's very easy in this community to develop the reputation as a badass and like, oh, he works with the dark forces. Hide your hair from him, which is a completely unwarranted thing. You know, you don't actually have to hide your hair from me. If anything, if I collect your hair, it's because I'm afraid one day you're going to get cancer and I need to make a doll baby to cure you.
That's what he said. That's what he says.
That's what I say. Then you piss me off and I feed you to my dragon doll and I start doing action figures and it's just weird.
Feed me to the blog.
Anyway. But so the idea of these cosmologies, it's very easy to, in our community, to be walking a fine line between doing what is socially acceptable and doing what is fringe. But then there's this other area somewhere way off to the side, which is, it completely violates, I think, even what we would say is, you know, in that fringe zone. And I think these girls, what they did, I haven't seen any pagans coming out to say, no, they were totally valid. That's actually how they should meet this egregore of Slender Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because I think that if it were a different situation, for example, if somebody were finding chicken remains left on a grave or something like that, and That's actually a really terrible example because that's exactly what you would not do, Kumi. But
and The Wild Hunt does a good job of discussing these things. But you see more often than I think we would like instances of there were spell ingredients left at the crime scene, and then all of a sudden every pagan everywhere is saying, well, they're not real pagans, that's not real magic, or they did it wrong, or this is not that, or and that kind of thing, and trying to distance themselves immediately instead of using the opportunity to say, okay, well, this is what they're claiming, this is the part of the community that they're acknowledging, and instead of acknowledging that we have a tumor and trying to get some help and to fix it, we're just trying to excise it and just cut it out as quickly as humanly possible, and to just hack it off instead of trying to understand it and understand, you know, the function of it.
Yes, and I mean, and that happened very much. We've had that happen a lot in the past couple of years. The example I'm thinking of is Kenny Klein, who I cannot wait for the riot to come back in full force because I want to hear your story on that.
Yeah, it's coming.
But at the same time, like, this is somebody who contributed something to the pagan community, and it's something that I never got into, but I could have very easily been interested in it because he's very much on the same wavelength I am in terms of incorporating fairy and folk tales into the performance of magic and spirituality. And he writes these books that are on that. But then instantly, you know, the second that just for anybody who's uninformed about this, Kenny Klein was arrested for possession of child pornography in New Orleans, and he has written several books on fairy tale and folklore magic prior to this as well. And from all indications, I don't know if he confessed exactly, but it seemed like he was at least acknowledging that the images that they found were his. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
From what I know, and I've been in contact with a few people here and there, but from what I know, he basically has confessed that he did indeed, you know, download these images and you know, set them up for distribution and that kind of thing. He did not try to disassociate himself from, you know, he didn't try to say, well, this is not my computer, these are not my images, this is not my hard drive. I mean, he pretty much owned up to, this was his, this is what he did. Any more salient details to the case, I don't know. But I think as far as the general gist of it, that's pretty much how it went.
Right. And for my purposes, there's not a lot of question that he did something wrong, something that I think most people in our community are going to say very, very wrong. And in fact, some people in our community would be out for his blood because of that.
Absolutely. I mean, it inspired... It incited a riot, absolutely. I mean, it definitely, I posted a post on that. I put a post on the blog, and I think that is the highest amount of traffic I have ever had to my website ever. It inspired quite a bit of discussion and of people. But what I didn't understand was, and you're talking about this social contract that we should have, not only as members of a greater society, but as members of a pagan community, you know, and there's all these people that are saying, well, I saw for years that Kenny Klein was around young children. I saw for years that, you know, he took pictures of young children, or there was just something off about him. And nobody ever said anything. And I get that, you know, there is some instance of, you know, if this were a singular incident and somebody saw something and they just didn't want to be the one to get it wrong. You know, you just don't want to be the one to get it wrong. And to see a dad, you know, spank his kid in just the wrong way, and then you're the one that's trying to get a father's child taken away because you just saw the one bad thing and the one bad context without knowing the full story, without knowing that that dad is actually a really great dad, and he just spanked his child in the middle of a store, and 50 years ago that would have been not a thing, but today it's terrible. But it seemed in this instance that the greater community seemed to have kind of expected this for a while. And I think that's been my issue, and that's been a lot of people's issue. that this was sort of a known thing, and that nobody owned up to the social contract and the social care and the social welfare that we're sort of responsible for in our community to say, hey, if everybody is in agreement with this, maybe somebody should say something to the authorities, you know, before now, before he could have a history of 20 years of abuse, you know, and,
right.
And I think that's sort of the angle that I take on it.
Right. And now we're at the point where, you know, I saw at least one person saying that they thought that they should, you know, do some sort of public burning of his books, which, you know, anyway, but even with that, it's the idea is that they're trying to expunge his existence, scratching his name off the monuments.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
In the way,
they're
in
trying
the way
to
of
say
ancient...
that he is not and was never a real pagan. Air quotes, trademark,
right.
Real pagan. And the thing was, he was
yeah.
a real pagan. He was really a pagan, and he really committed a crime. That doesn't mean he wasn't really a pagan.
Yes.
It
yes.
Is...
Okay. Yes. This is the meat. Of it. This is the heart of, I think, one of the arguments. You can be both.
Exactly.
You can be a real pagan and have mental health issues. You can be a real pagan
and really
and
commit
hear
a crime.
And you can be a real pagan and you can murder somebody. You can be a real pagan and you can be a child molester. Being pagan does not instantly make you a saint, a good person, a bodhisattva. It doesn't do that.
Exactly. And the interesting thing is that we only allow, I mean, this is perfect example of in-group, out-group dynamics in social science. You know, anybody that's a real pagan, well, we identify with them and we immediately think good things about them. And, you know, they look like us, they smell like us, they sound like us, at least spiritually speaking, we can identify with them. We have a thing that we can identify with. But the minute that they step outside of that, well, we want to disassociate themselves. They become an other. They become a member of an other. But the interesting thing is we don't do that with other groups. We don't say, oh, well, that person wasn't a real Christian. Well, you know, you find out that Chick-fil-A is giving tons of money to organizations that stop gay marriage, or you find that Andrea Yates said, you know, devout Christian woman killed her children. We don't say, oh, well, they weren't a real Christian. We in the community, or, you know, people that are outside of the Christian community, use that as sort of confirmation bias to say, see,
yes.
Christianity, that's a bad religion. You know,
yes.
Christians,
yes.
You know,
and
the
we,
greater...
And we let it drive our assumptions.
Exactly. The greater society in here, at least in the United States, if you see somebody commit a crime on television or you see an act of terrorism and they remotely look like somebody in their family could have been from the Middle East, oh, well, that just confirms that Islam is a hate-filled religion, that all that they're out to do is kill everybody, when that's not true. And
right.
they use it as confirmation bias to sort of bolster their already held belief that, oh, well, my in-group is good and all the out-group stuff is bad. And the minute that you step outside of my in-group, then you become an out-group person and I have to think bad things about you. And like
right.
what you're saying... That's, you know, you can be both. You can be a real pagan and be a real criminal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a comedian, Eddie Izzard, who...
I
has
love
a
Eddie Izzard.
Where
oh,
he's wondering.
Oh,
and he has that one part about how he's a transvestite and they caught this man who was in Central Park who was shooting, who was wandering out of a cave that he was living in Central Park, like you do. And then he's shooting these geese, and they come and they arrest him, and they go to his cave, and they find all these women's shoes, and they say, oh, well, that's why he was shooting the geese. He was a transvestite. And Eddie Izzard's point is, no, he was a weirdo. He was a weirdo transvestite, yes, but he was a weirdo. That's why he was shooting the geese. Not that the transvestite part had nothing to do with it.
Yes.
That's what's happening here is... The fact that Kenny Klein is some form of child abuser, the fact that you know, you've got I think there was a woman a few years ago who committed a murder, claiming that it was part of a Wiccan sacrifice, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. You know,
oh, gosh,
and the fact
that
any of that
fall.
Exists
yeah.
does not negate the religion, and in fact, it should allow us to have a dialogue about mental health. And make that something else. Make it about the actual health issues, not about trying to defend our faith by completely excising those people from this group.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the worst way to cure cancer is to, you know, oh, well, my lug has cancer. Well, let's hack that off and let's hack off the you know, I've got lung cancer. Okay, well, let's just open me up and hack them out. I don't need my lungs. Well,
right.
No. You know, there are treatments. You understand what a cancer is, and then you work to, you know, change those cancerous cells into healthy cells. You kill the bad and you... well, that's a terrible example. But
let's be careful, Banks.
Let's not do that. I'm sorry. Slender Man, shh, hush. I'm talking.
Oh, that's awful.
But, you know, what I'm saying is instead of trying to hack out, instead of trying to excise the thing that we have decided is now the cancer in our community and say that it was never part of us, that it's not part of us, to say, yep, that's part of our community. And we need to acknowledge that this happens in our community. And what do we do about it? What do we do, you know, to use your term, what do we do because we have this social contract with one another? We want to watch out for each other and make sure that we're a healthy community. And, you know, maybe not a happy, healthy community. You don't necessarily always have to be happy, you know, and smiling and delightful. But at least a healthy community and one that watches each other's backs and doesn't make negative assumptions and realizing that, you know, that these things happen and that ignoring them isn't going to make them not happen anymore, you know?
Right. And to offer that same treatment, that same respect to other faiths, you know, not say, oh, Westboro Baptist Church, those are all, you know, That's exactly what Christianity is about. Because you know what? It's not.
It's not.
Just not.
It's not. You know, the teachings of Christianity are not that. The teachings of Islam are not to go out and to slam airplanes into towers. That is not Islam. No. You know, the teachings of Catholicism do not say, oh, well, we need to go out and kill all of these small cultures throughout the world and force them into, you know, the spirit and the heart of a faith is usually to love your neighbor, to get along, to be good to one another. And people that take it to a darker place exist everywhere. It is an immanent thing with an A. It is an immanent thing inside human beings that sometimes people take things to dark places. They are not the majority in any group. They are never the majority. They are always a very loud fringe minority. And yes. And to try to supplant them and make them the face of the majority is false.
Yes. And at the same time, we have to accept that every once in a while, there may be these episodes of darkness that come forward that are just going to slip through our grasp of understanding, and we just have to be empathetic towards the people involved. I mean, you know, this Slender Man thing, I'm not arguing that these girls are pagans at all.
I don't think that them being pagan was ever, I mean, I don't think this was ever a thing.
No,
that they're claiming to be pagan.
Right, but they are following this kind of folk belief, quasi-spiritual practice that could, somebody could draw a very tangential line to our community, just for the sake of making parallels and observations.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, who's to say? I mean, this could very easily have been, I'm trying to appease Loki.
Right.
I'm trying to, or whatever, insert your pagan-ish flavored deity of choice here. You know, I'm
right.
trying to appease, hell, I'm trying to appease Ares.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this could very easily have been some other deity that pagans on the whole accept more as a real thing, instead of an internet meme. And, you know, but again, on the flip side, we as pagans, as a modern neo-pagan community, have been trying very hard to incorporate pop culture entities and pop culture deities into our practice. So, you know, who's to say that somebody out there isn't having another experience with a Slender Man-style figure? You know,
yes.
Goodness gracious, people take Cthulhu and incorporate it into their practice. And, you know,
yes.
For all intents and purposes, that comes from, you know, science fiction from the early 1900s. And, you know, that's not necessarily meaning that somebody is doing something wrong. It's not necessarily meaning that they're not really doing the thing that they're claiming that they're doing. You know, their UPG is their own. But it mm-hmm. means that we shouldn't immediately discount it. And it means that we shouldn't, as a culture, try to monitor one another and to self-heal, you know, as a society.
Yes. And I want to throw one more example out of just something to kind of think about in all of this conversation as well. Do you know the story of Thich Quang Duc?
I do not, so I'm very excited for this.
Okay, well, I think you'll know it when I say it. He was a Buddhist monk in the 1960s, I believe, and he was protesting, let's say Vietnam, I think, the involvement in Vietnam. And his method of protesting was to literally light himself on fire.
Self-immolation. And that's that. Yes. I think there was just an article a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago. It's still going on.
Yeah. And it was a form of protest. It's a form of, but it's a sort of religiously expressed protest. And you know, that's something clearly his spiritual path led him to do a dark action in service of what I think he perceived and what many people perceived as a right cause. And this is one of those examples where I think every once in a while we're going to have something like this surface. And in those situations, I think our best response is attempting to be empathetic and understanding of the fact that I don't necessarily believe that he had mental health issues. I don't think his spirituality was incorrect or incompatible with any social contracts. You know, there are just going to be instances where individual cases dictate different responses, and we have to be prepared to address each of those cases with empathy, with understanding, and as best as possible, you know, with love and openness, I think.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you know, that kind of practice is seen as martyrdom. You know, it's not seen as somebody doing something. I mean, it is seen as shocking. It is seen as tragic, but it is not seen as somebody with some serious mental health issues, at least not from what I've read. It's not seen with somebody with some serious mental health issues out there committing suicide. Yes, it is suicide, but not in its, you know, dark, depressed connotation almost. He was doing something to raise awareness, to better the rest of his community, and to cause shock and to cause an awakening for people to pay attention to the situation. You know, and there were a lot of copycat self-immolations after that. And like I said, it's still going on today. That's not to say that if you would like to draw attention to your situation, that you should go outside and blow yourself up or light yourself on fire or jump off a cliff or something like that. There are other ways to communicate these days. But, you know, it is an example of not all dark thoughts are created equal. You know, this person has altruistic intentions. Again, it led to a tragedy, and I don't know that I would support somebody that said, you know what, I'm going to go down to Times Square and light myself on fire for gay marriage. You know, I am all for some gay marriage, because I'm having one, but...
Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you. I never thought that I would talk about self-immolation and gay marriage in the same sentence, but you know... I am all for some gay marriage. I don't think you need to set yourself on fire to get your point across. Mm-hmm. But, actually, this just came to mind, and this is a horrific video, but there was somebody that, a drag queen in Russia. A Russian drag queen that, very famously, this past year, whenever, I'm sure that you're fully aware, whenever the Russian government started almost a genocide against gay people in their country. To raise awareness for this drag queen went onto YouTube and loaded a video where she sewed her mouth shut. Really, actually sewed her mouth shut. Ooh, And I saw about the first 1 second of it, and I couldn't watch anymore. Because it was... But it went viral, as it would want, you know, as things like that are wont to do. And it really drew a lot of attention to that situation. So, you know, there is a whole spectrum of these kinds of thoughts, these kinds of actions, these kinds of motivations. And, you know, again, it's not to say that you should not, you know, see them all the way through. It's not to say that you shouldn't, you know, mentally sort of go through this, unpack this. What does this mean? I think that, you know, if you're going to sew your mouth shut, I think that if you're going to light yourself on fire, I think if you're going to kill somebody else or harm yourself or something like that, if you're having those kinds of thoughts and it leads to harm physically, psychologically of self or others, at least get some therapeutic oversight. And get a second opinion, maybe. And who knows, you might find a therapist that said, well, if all you're doing is sewing your mouth shut and not cutting off your lips, then okay, or whatever. Who knows? But, you know, there is a whole spectrum. Not everything is about, you know, pain and death and killing other people.
Yes. I agree.
I agree too.
Well, good. We've reached agree.
Yay.
So yeah, so that's, I mean, I don't know if there's any more that I have to add to the conversation. I think we've definitely, sacrificed this horse at the side of the ocean and then beaten it a few thousand times.
A few.
Any final thoughts?
You know, I think that if I could just, sum everything up into one final thought, it would be, if you are feeling like you, you know, are having these darker thoughts, that your practice, that your relationship with deity, with the divine, with spirit, with whatever, is leading you to want to harm yourself, to want to harm other people, it is not anti-pagan to seek therapeutic assistance. It's not doing anything wrong to your spirituality to ask for help or to at least ask for guidance. You know, the scientific community, the medical community is not going to immediately tell you that you're crazy. They're not going to lock you up. You know, they are not evil. They are not there to take away your spirituality.
And if they do react like that, find yourself another scientist, another therapist, another friend, because
they're not a real scientist.
Right. You know, that shouldn't be the response that you get. You should be able to find somebody who can listen and empathize. And I think that's, you know, I think your takeaway is an excellent and a wonderful takeaway. And I think I'm going to take away on the other side of that, that we have a responsibility, that we have the social contract, that if we see someone in that situation, we need to extend the hand of friendship, the hand of help to that person if we can.
Absolutely. And when we as a community see that those discussions are happening, you know, mm-hmm. don't immediately try to take the side of the spiritual and the side of the anti-scientific. You know, medicalizing something doesn't necessarily, you know, is not necessarily a bad thing. Getting help, you know, involving yourself is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, it might not be fun, it might not be easy, it might be really hard, but you could very easily save someone's life.
Yes. And from the flip side, if you see somebody experiencing something that you feel is clearly a result of mental illness, don't discount it either. It's real to them.
Absolutely. I mean, it at least assume that first. Assume that mm-hmm. this person is legitimate in their belief, that this is actually happening to them.
Yeah.
Because if you go at it from any other way, all you're going to do is alienate somebody. And yeah. you are not going to learn, they are not going to learn, and it's only going to continue and possibly get worse.
Yeah. Well, all right, Firelight. Yeah. Firelight, thank you so much for being a part of this and for having this discussion with me. I really appreciate being able to sound off like this on something I think is really important to our community, that this tragic incident, which thankfully has turned out to be slightly less tragic, as the victim is making a full recovery from what I understand.
Yeah. The even though they stabbed the girl 19 times, they missed her heart. They missed and she is going to recover. She is going to move on from this.
Yes, and I think we're all very, I don't want to say happy, but I think we're all very relieved to hear that. Yes. I think even the girls who perpetrated the crime are probably relieved to hear that, for whatever reason, you know, that I think it's a good thing for everybody involved. But, you know, I'm sorry that this tragedy had to happen to be able to have a discussion like this, but I'm glad that this discussion has happened.
Absolutely. You know, I think that, and like we've been talking about, we so very often want to immediately disassociate ourselves from these things. And instead, I think that conversations like this need to happen. We need to embrace it. We need to say, okay, this is a thing that happened. How are we going to deal with it? Instead of just immediately saying, well, nope, not us. And I'm glad that we can come together and have these conversations. And thank you so much, Corey, for inviting me on and getting me out of my podcast silence of the last couple of months.
Well, thank you for letting me be your first this year. So, or I guess it was not this year, but
my first this summer. How about that? You're my summer podcast lovin'.
So, summer fling.
Summer fling. So thank you so much. If you would like to hear any more about the riot, the blog is at incitingariot.com. You can find the podcast on iTunes, through Podbean, lots of places that you can download and subscribe to the show. If you'd like to email me about anything that we discussed today, you can email me firelight@incitingariot.com, firelight@incitingariot.com. Find me on Facebook. You can find me on the Twitter @incitingariot. And I welcome discussion, and I'm really excited to hear from you all about what you think of, you know, this kind of UPG and embracing these kinds of discussions.
And if you want to reach out to me, I am at compassandkey@gmail.com. You can find more about vernacular religion or folk belief at our website, newworldwitchery.com, where you can hear a lot of podcasts about that topic. And you can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter as well. There are links on our webpage.
Excellent.
And that will about do it for tonight's episode. I wanted to again extend a special thank you to Firelight from Inciting a Riot for joining me on this discussion. He will also be releasing a version of this discussion as well through his show, I believe. So you should be able to get this through either of our podcast feeds. This probably will be our only episode for June. We do have some material recorded for the next couple of months as well, though, so don't worry, we're not completely going any away or anything like that anytime soon. You have to put up with this for a little bit longer, I guess. If you have any further thoughts on this discussion, if this sparked some ideas for you, please feel free to email either myself or Firelight through the information that we provided at the end there. We really just hope this does foster a little bit of a broader discussion about dealing with people's sort of practiced faith and practiced belief systems, and some of the manifestations of that can be read as harmful, as well as you know, dealing with issues of mental health and being able to be supportive in an open-minded community like ours towards those who are struggling with mental health issues. And one sort of final note, a lot of what we were discussing had to do with mental health and sort of the idea of people who are facing mental health issues that may cause harm in their lives, which of course is not the case for everybody who is experiencing a mental health problem or mental health issue, or even just, you know, facing an alternative mental health state of being. You know, this discussion was really centered around a set of criminal actions performed by a pair of young girls who may be struggling with some mental health issues, or very well may not be. I don't know, but I'm sort of reading it as they are. And that doesn't encompass the entire range of mental health activities and practices in any community, most especially ours. So, but at any rate, I just wanted to say thank you all for listening. I know this was a longer episode. I hope this was worthwhile for some of you. And we will be back in July with another episode, I hope. So stay tuned to the feed for that, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening. Be well.